Hello, everyone. I'm John McDonald. I am an American playwright here in America, as I've just said. And I'm here for another fabulous episode of Everything is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff, the podcast about all pop culture. And I'm here with my co-host, one of my best friends, and one of the best English writers I know. Hello, Magnus.
Aw, thank you very much, darling. You've put so many accolades and kind words upon me. I'm not sure if I fully deserve all of it, but I graciously will accept your kindness. And may I say a happy birthday to you today.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So this will come out as an episode 2 weeks after my birthday. If you are listening to the episode previous to the Sister Act 2, that episode actually comes out on my birthday. So it's very exciting because I do love celebrating myself as the Tree Aries I am. And it was kind of no mistake that I made the theme star-crossed lovers because I do love a good romantic movie.
And this, what we're talking about today is, from what I understand, one of your personal favorites.
Yeah, it's probably set the standard for me in movies about romance, specifically queer romance. Mm-hmm. It's probably the first movie about a gay male character that I fantasized about, I will say, in the delicate manner. and I think that even for our time, this movie and the play it's based on are both incredibly progressive in different ways. And I'm very excited to talk about it. It actually means quite a big deal to me. This is one of the formative queer movies of my life. So like in some ways, some people have World of the World Mine, Heartstopper, Love, Simon, and Moonlight and Call Me By Your Name, things like that. This was that for me. This was part of a kind of block of queer movies I saw all at once, and this is the one that I continue to gravitate back toward. And it was mentioned probably the last time Russell Crowe was on Graham Norton, it got mentioned, and so I thought, well, if people are still thinking and talking about it, I'd love to talk about it too.
And I'm not sure we've name dropped it yet. What are we discussing today?
We are discussing, for me, it's 1995. For people in Australia, it was 94. But in 1995, The Sum of Us was a film based on a play out of Australia. And this is one of the two Russell Crowe plays gay roles that he did when he was younger. I think it's the better of the two roles, personally. And so this is a film that kind of helped set up Russell Crowe's career. Jack Thompson, who's very famous as an Australian actor, this is one of the highlights of his career for me. Most people that know Jack Thompson's name probably know him from, he had a small role in Star Wars Episode II, and he also had, I looked this up and I have to find it again, opposite Dennis Hopper in Mad Dog Morgan. In 1997, he was in Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. So most people that like American dramas from the 90s, that's where they'd have seen him at, as Sonny Seller. But I always think of him from The Sum of Us as Harry Mitchell. So yeah, we're going to talk about The Sum of Us today from technically 1995 for me, because 94 was its Australian release, so.
Wow, so this year it's actually 3 decades old then.
Yeah, which sounds about right. It's a deeply personal, but it's one of those formative movies that people have where, like, I love Clue and it's a good movie and it did inform my sense of humor slightly, but like when I think about movies that inform the way that I write dramas and the way I look at more gentle dramas, there's no like guns being waved about in this, but like this is like the softer version of my love for drama, because it's a romantic drama, coming of age story, kind of star-crossed lovers thing. It's very personal and it's very progressive for this time. It's actually worryingly progressive. for our time, I have to be completely honest.
Yes, yeah, so it's interesting that considering the plot of the film and such, it is quite like impressive that it got made and had such strong talent associated with it. I know this was really helping kickstart Russell Crowe's career, but he was still quite a young, talented actor at the time. So for him to be attached to the project was great.
And Jack
So
Thompson was quite a coup too, because he wasn't even in Australia. Like, he came back to Australia to make this film. Like, he had branched out into international work before this, but he came back to make this. And this film the screenplay was written by the writer of the play as well, and the play is part of like a trilogy of works. And so it's a very well thought out, the progress of it was very well thought out, and very current for the time, very current for our time too. So, yeah.
So, sorry, you're saying that this was based on a play that's part of a trilogy.
I haven't seen the other parts of the trilogy. I was surprised about that too. But apparently, this is the third in David Stevens' Currency trilogy. So it's The Inn at the Beginning of the World, The Beast and the Beauty, which had a run in 2012. And then The Sum of Us was the third part of this trilogy. So I haven't seen Inn at the Beginning of the World. It rings a bell, but I can't remember why. But it's part of a trilogy of plays. I don't know if they're all about queerness or things like that. But David Stevens, who got to do the screenplay, which is why it's fairly accurate to the play, there's one big difference that I think actually improves the story. But it's pretty, like, even the fourth wall breaking in this film, which is was a remarkable thing. And when in 95, when I was a tiny little gayling, it blew my mind that you could break the fourth wall. The fourth wall breaking is something that moved from the play to the film as well. So it's not in the trailer. If you go looking for the trailer for this, they really lean on the comedic elements of straight dad, gay son. But it's not really comedy. So unlike First Wives Club, which was sort of billed as a comedy, and both like the trailer to the movie are almost one for one, they really pump up the comedy for the trailer for like it's funny, but it's more witty than it is comedic necessarily. So yeah.
That's interesting. I never saw the trailer, so but it almost sounds as if they've sculpted the trailer into something that's quite different thematically compared to actually what the film's about. So do you think it's letting people go in with the right mindset of what this film actually is about?
I think it does. I think it's about in 1995, especially, because you have to remember, we kind of take queerness and visibility in media for granted. In 1995, it was still, especially in America, I don't know what it was like in Australia. If we have any Aussie listeners that want to chime in, like in the YouTube comments, in the archives, or like hit us up on our Instagrams. I don't know if it was more accepted in Australia, but like this story in 94, 95, and even back in 1990 when the play was written, visibility and queerness wasn't like as big to do. Like John Inman as the most flamboyant salesman at the Grace Brothers, the idea that he couldn't be like an open homosexual, and the innuendo was that he was flaming, but it was like the worst kept secret at Grace Brothers. Like the In 95, we just didn't have a lot of queerness like this, and we didn't really have like video rental services for non-adult queer films. There were barely adult queer films in 95 that I'm aware of. There were probably a couple studios, but definitely they were in the minority. Like I think people like we just have enough removed in time. But you cannot take movies like this for granted. Like, this is, along with Bedrooms and Hallways and Billy's First Hollywood Screen Kiss, probably, and Broken Hearts Club, probably one of only four queer movies I ever found on VHS before I was 20, I'd say. Not that I wasn't really looking for them. I tended to stumble over these on cable, because I didn't really know that about myself yet. The signs were fairly obvious. I kept pausing the parts where Russell Crowe is definitely very nude or very close to nude in the beginnings of the opening scenes of the film. So there were signs. But it's a remarkable film. Also, I think this film makes the case, like Brokeback Mountain did in our premiere, where sometimes it's okay to have straight people play gay characters. I know that we're talking about it now, but in 95, it would not have even been a question. If you wanted to have the representation, you had to have a straight actor play a gay character. It was the only way it worked. And sometimes straight actors wouldn't do it because it would ruin their career. Matt Baum talked about the British film Victim from 1961, I think, and it changed the landscape of the sodomy laws in Britain. Some of us didn't change the landscape, but it was a very important part of the queer conversation that continues to this day. So, and Russell Crowe made that possible. Like, Russell Crowe is very straight, but he made it possible in this film to see queer people as like three-dimensional characters, which was still very revolutionary in 95. I can't belabor the point enough. I feel like we're just far enough removed from the time where we just it's this movie was a revolution, and it's still very prescient for the world we live in today.
And we've mentioned like the age of it before, but realistically, 30 years is not it, for people and their lives, it is a good period of time. But overall, when you consider it in comparison to time in general, 30 years isn't really any sort of time. So, in a way, to see such change happening in real time as we have a representation and such is actually quite astounding. And I think we do think about it at times, but this is a really great example of that. One question I was going to ask you. So, would you say Jeff, the gay son, considering that up to that point you mentioned about Mr. Humphreys from Are You Being Served and such being quite almost like a stereotypical campy character and such, would you say Jeff, though, falls into that trap or doesn't?
I think Jeff is a bit of a manic pixie dream queer character. He's sort of this masculine passing rugby player whose day job is a plumber. Like, he's like one step removed from adult film character, if you want to be completely honest about it.
Mean
But
Falcon
he
Classic?
yeah, but he reads that way in the stage play too. They don't really change it. They don't make him less femme. I think the whole idea is that they're really trying to bring home the idea that this blue-collar working-class dad supports his gay son. And so they're alike in a lot of ways. So I think it's that both the dad and the son are very masculine. And I actually kind of like that representation because I like it because I got so used to seeing like the yardstick of coming of age stories being about white twinks that I actually find Russell Crowe as a slightly older, kind of knows himself, but has trouble looking for love story. He's very much an authentic, it's better than Matthew Perry in like Three to Tango, where he's like a guy pretending to be gay, and that's like the whole arc of the movie. And they have some like femme presenting gays that come on to him at several points in the movie that make him really uncomfortable. So it's much better than that. I think the masculine elements are really about not performative masculinity, but that he is just an authentic, he just happens to be gay, but he plays rugby and is masculine. But he has some like slightly femme traits of he's very like he's slightly vain. He's a little worried about his weight. There's a whole like sub story in Act One about his like desire for Sara Lee Poundcake desserts, but also not wanting to be fat so that men will find him desirable. And it's not glib. It's very much like an honest, like I'm a little vain about it. And it's played for laughs, but not at anybody's expense. It's kind of like, well, you're super young, you can eat the dessert, but he doesn't want to because he's afraid that that will like affect the way he acts when he's out on the prowl. It's I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's a bad portrayal. I don't know that it would work with a femme Jeff. I don't think that'd be bad. I'd want to see it in like a play form. I think it would work better in the play. But yeah, I think Mask Jeff is specifically there because Harry is very mask. And I think that works. It's a masculine queer movie. I'm just going to be real about it. It's a very masculine queer film, yeah.
But then again, we've discussed about how this film was quite progressive for its time. And in a way, isn't having a gay character that doesn't quite fit into any of the sort of expectations that you would have expected for such a, like, almost like such a film like this,
If
being written at the time and such? Doesn't that in a
yeah.
way? Sorry, go on. Sorry, what's your point?
No, so to that point, I think if anything, Greg, who in the stage play is more of the like boyfriend, as opposed to Greg in the film, who's more of the love interest that's going to become the boyfriend, Greg is slightly more femme, and Greg's femininity is the thing that his father seems to object to. Like his queerness comes out slightly more feminine than Harry's, or slightly more feminine than Jeff's. But it's never made as a bad thing. So what's interesting is that Greg and Jeff both have these like dreams of doing bigger things in their life, and Greg's is more toward flowers and nature, which is why the end of the film takes place in a park. And so there's something slightly more femme about Greg, but it's not. This movie isn't about passing. It's not the Birdcage where you're teaching someone to be more masculine that's inherently more feminine, which every time I see the Birdcage, absolutely breaks my heart. It makes it a very hard movie to watch because in trying to teach, quote unquote, Nathan Lane's character to be more masculine, like the slings and arrows against Albert are just unbearable to watch. Whereas the Sum of Us, even in its harder moments, is actually it's actually a delight in a lot of ways. There is a scene where, Greg does get kicked out after his dad sees him at a pride parade on TV. But even in that, you never feel like Greg's life is necessarily in danger. Greg stands up for himself, he comes out. It's actually not a nice scene. Nice isn't the word for it, but it's not as harrowing as it could have been. When you watch like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which is also a queer Australian film that has a bigger following than Some of Us, there are moments in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert where there is a visceral danger that is going to happen to the drag queens, and they are not safe. And I never feel unsafe watching Some of Us. Which is kind of what I like about romance movies, is that in a lot of ways, a romantic movie is not about a lack of safety. It happens sometimes, very rare. But yeah, the Sum of Us, even in its harder moments, never feels like as dangerous as Priscilla does, for instance.
Yes. But I suppose that's the thing. As you say, it's a romance slash drama film. It I think it was never wanting to portray itself any differently. Although hearing how the trailer portrays it is slightly
Yeah, they really,
disconcerting.
so they don't include the bits about the grandma being, they have a little bit of the exchange of your grandma was a dyke, and then the dad corrects him, his grandmother was a lesbian. But that's actually a very funny line of having the actual gay grandson being like, nah, man, grandma was a dyke, and her son being like, excuse me, your grandmother was a lesbian. It's that it's genuinely funny, and it's funny in a not hurtful way. Like that's a great thing in the first act and even in the third act, this movie after Harry has the stroke, is that fourth wall breaking is never like gratuitous. It doesn't feel like Deadpool. It's more like an aside from Shakespeare where the characters are talking to the audience and having a conversation that makes things feel more intimate. You feel like you're at the dining room table with them. You feel like when they're fighting, it's still very wink and nod, and they very much love each other. The love between Harry and Jeff as father who deeply cares for his son and just wants to see his son happy, just wants his son to have what he had before his wife died, is probably, except for Bert and Kurt on Glee, probably the best straight father gay son relationship I've ever seen in media. There could be another one out there. But like when I think about straight father gay son stuff, maybe Billy Elliot could be in that vein. But definitely Some of Us, the thing that draws me back to this movie is not just that Harry is accepting of his son and like tolerates his queerness. He's almost too accepting. He's almost like, hey, son, I bought you condoms and here's your gay magazines that I put all over the house. And I'm going to crash the end of your date with this dude that you want to hook up with. And like, it's a little uncomfortable, but it's amazing in its uncomfortability because you're like, this is how a straight dad would act if a straight son brought home a prom date. And it's kind of amazing to have that happen because he's just being very earnest. He's just so excited for his gay son to find love. And I, again, cannot stress enough, in this 1995 film, more progressive than a lot of the queer roles that we've seen since then, in how straight and queer participate in each other's life. The scene in Call Me By Your Name, where the dad talks to the son after the Armie Hammer character leaves, would also probably fit in this vein. But imagine that, but imagine a whole movie of that, where Timothée Chalamet's character is out the whole film and the dad is like a little too supportive, and you get the Some of Us much, much better acted in my mind, honestly.
I do wonder how Jack Thompson came to be in this role. I wonder if he had heard about it or read the script, and that's why he returned, because he kind of like really felt the role and wanted to act in it.
Jack Thompson has a pretty progressive career. He was so well loved in Australia, they made him part of like their film institute or something like that, as far as I can tell.
Ooh.
One interesting about that Jack Thompson that I learned researching for this is he was actually the first centerfold for a magazine called Clio. And so he has sort of that comfortable in his own skin energy you need to play Harry. Harry is a character that exemplifies comfortable with my sexuality, comfortable with my son's sexuality. It's not really my business. I'm more concerned about him finding love. And so I can imagine Jack Thompson was partially cast because he's not afraid to take those roles. He did roles in soap operas. He started doing character work because he didn't want to be pigeonholed as a romantic lead, it looks like. Yeah, but Jack Thompson as Harry Mitchell is, he was an incredible find, rightly so. And he plays the comfort so well. It's a little cringe, but it's cringe in that way where you feel like your dad kind of knows he's going over the line, but he can because he's your dad and you love him. He's just being a big doof at the moment. Yeah, but I think Jack probably got it because he because I can't imagine that it would have bothered him at all. I can imagine he probably saw the play because the play's premiered in 1990, so it would have been in workshops before then. You know, if he was a working actor in Australia, he might have even auditioned to play Harry on stage the first time, or potentially even play Jeff the first time on stage. Because you could almost cast an older son as Jeff. If I didn't love Cat in a Hot Tin Roof so much, Jeff would probably be a role that I'd happily play. Obviously, I wouldn't be quite as hunky as Russell Crowe, but I'd be like 80% of the way there.
Oh, indeed. So, sorry, just trying to think what where to take the conversation to next. We've had a good deal of discussion about how wonderfully progressive this film was, and the more we discuss about it, to be honest, like, Jack, the father's betrayal, the son, etc. There's all these little aspects of it that really come together to make the great overall whole of the film. And as you say, the endearing relationship between the two, I think, is probably the heart of the movie that really, captures the attention and keeps it there.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about, if I may,
Oh, go ahead.
I don't, yeah.
Please do, yeah.
I'd
Please
like to
do. It's
talk
your
about,
birthday.
it is my birthday. Thank you. I have fabulous chocolate cake to eat. I've been eating the cake out before this, and I'll be eating the cake after this. I'd like to talk about the two changes, that are the kind of the
Ooh,
biggest
yeah.
changes in moving from in an adaptation from stage to screen. And not like the, so the obvious ones are if you do something in a film, you can shoot on location, you have extras, it's bigger, it's a different medium than stage, so the intimacy level is different. So not the obvious ones. So there are two kind of not changes, but two things in the adaptation that are different from what you'd see on the stage. The first one is in the movie itself, you actually get flashbacks to the lesbian grandmother. And the reveal that she became lesbian later in life and married some and had like this relationship with someone she was in church with is a lot more intimate because they actually throughout these clips show the deterioration of that lesbian relationship because the kids of the woman that the grandmother falls in love with take her away. And so you actually get this interesting progression of both Jeff and Harry remembering the grandma, but Harry doesn't just have those good, sweet, intimate memories. He also has the memory of watching this later in life lesbian couple being torn apart by intolerance. And it's a really big point of how he accepted his mom, even though he doesn't want to call her a dyke, he only wants to call her lesbian. He wants it to be a higher class thing. But also, he had a front row witnessing seat to his mom's heartbreak, and it made him even more determined to accept Jeff. And it's not something you see in the stage play as much because they acknowledge it, but they only talk about it. You never see the grandmother character. The film itself, the flashbacks are done, so they have kind of this very nostalgic feel to them. There's something very intimate about all the scenes with the grandmother, and it's absolutely heartbreaking watching these two older women that found each other later in life being torn apart by intolerance. And you see that mirrored a little later when Greg is standing up to his dad as he's being kicked out. But Greg has somewhere to go, and it's very painful, but it's not as viscerally painful. I actually really the adaptation choices, both of them, I really liked, and I actually think having the grandmother character there, like having a physical person there, even though she doesn't actually speak very much in the film, is really important and adds something not just to the fourth wall breaking, but to really the center of the story, which is about love. Yeah.
Would you almost argue that part of the progressive element would almost be showing these effects of intolerance? Because previously we've, representation would be sort of like joking on a stereotype, maybe sh not necessarily showing gay people having a positive outcome or like living a happy life or something like that. Not just so perhaps part of the appeal of this movie is not just showing like how powerful love can be when it's being demonstrated, but maybe part of it was also showing what the effects of intolerance do to people and the harsh reality of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we the grandmother never says how she self-identified, if she ever considered herself a lesbian at all, or if it was just comfort with a friend. The inference from the male characters is that it is that she was a lesbian, but that's never confirmed. The interesting thing about this is that this is a movie that's very critical of a major religious movement at the time that is very critical of the LGBT lifestyle. So the movie is framed around grandmother fell in love with another parishioner at a Salvation Army church. And so I don't know enough about the Salvation Army in Australia to know exactly, but the intolerance is never pinned on the church. It's pinned on the kids of the other mom. And there's never an inference that it's like an actual church thing, but obviously anti-LGBT precepts from the Salvation Army Church, which is well known in America, is that they're anti-gay. That colors it, but it's never explained exactly what happened, just that they found this late in life lesbian coupling idea to be detestable. And so they like literally drag their mother out of the house. And probably the hardest scene of the film. Yeah.
Sorry.
No,
Such a
it's what's interesting is that you would think the hardest scene in the film would be that it's, I think it's a New Year's Eve scene, if I remember correctly, where we actually physically in the film, I don't know what happens on stage. We watch Harry literally having a stroke in real time as Joyce is driving off because she can't handle the idea that Harry supports Jeff. Like she just has no concept of like straight dad supporting gay son, and she like sees a couple of the Beefcake magazines Harry has bought for Jeff, and she just can't handle it. So the other great thing is that in this film, she comes back toward the end of the film. In the stage play, she just has a breakdown and then runs off hysterically. In the film, she came back, which I feel like is David Stevens trying to correct something that he probably figured out he could make the film stronger by. I really like the choice to have her come back because then she gets an interaction with Jeff and gets to see what's so great about Jeff that Harry doesn't just support him but loves his son so much. And so it's interesting is that the heartbreak of the film, the hardest scene of the film is one that's it's not nostalgic. It's nostalgic, but it's not like happy nostalgia. But it's this kind of scene where grandma's lover is being taken away, but then there's joy at the end of the film with this Jeff Joyce meeting where Jeff has taken on this role of caregiver and doesn't know that Joyce like ran out of the house like hysterically kind of upset, but that she comes back. And that coming back is so important, and I'm so glad that was a change because in the stage play she just goes, and then you never hear from her again, and her last line is like super not great. But in the film she comes back and she's clearly out of her depth and uncomfortable, but it's almost like the opposite of what happens to grandma and her lover in that she went away and assessed and was able to come back. And so it actually works really well. For me, I learned a lot about how to write romance from this film in a lot of ways. So,
Oh,
yeah.
and clearly from everything that you're saying, like you can see what impact it's had on you and how it's been able to, like, it's not just a memorable film for you, it's something that has informed like your outlook on both films and romantic writing.
Yeah. And like,
So
yeah.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, I'm just thinking for American audiences that love queer movies, Broken Hearts Club also does the fourth wall breaking, not quite as much. And also, Broken Hearts Club, you have to deal with Dean Cain playing gay, knowing everything we know about him now, sadly. But yeah, so the fourth wall break is something in queer cinema we don't see much of anymore, but it used to be kind of a very big thing. Billy's first Hollywood screen kiss starts with that. Broken Hearts Club has a little bit of that in that with Timothy Oliphant in the lead. Some of Us is the one that uses this fourth wall, interact with the audience, not in an aggressive way, but in a bigger way. It's more important to the story and how it pulls you in intimately, which I think is a really great move. So.
You mentioned earlier about when it comes to theatre and the actors being able to have sort of an aside to speak directly to the audience. Would you say that the fourth wall breaks in movies like this? It's sort of like a almost like an evolutionary offshoot of that theme from theatre, sort of like translated on, into a sort of show slash movie format.
And it's something you have to know how to do well. I think it's why most movies don't do it. Obviously, the big fourth wall break movie slash character most people think of is they think of Deadpool that does it for comedy. But an aside in a Shakespearean term, an aside on a play, is also about the acknowledging of the medium you're in. So it's really interesting to see it in film in a romantic comedy in this dramatic. It's also a great way to make sure Harry can still speak for himself, because after Harry has his stroke, he's still able to communicate with the audience and he can still convey his wishes for Jeff, even though his body has betrayed him. I kind of wish Sons of the Prophet also had this aside mechanism, because I would really love to see more queer theater doing that really well. But The Sum of Us uses it in the beginning for the dad and the son to both talk to the audience, and in the end, just for the dad, who still has so much to say, even though he's had this debilitating stroke. And he actually is like, he's very honest about, I don't want to drag my son down. I wish this hadn't happened to me. I still want him to like be his own man and find love. I still want him to be independent, but he has to take care of me, and it sucks. And it's a really great film about the tenderness of masculinity and like that expression of love that you can have for family members. And it's heartbreaking and wonderful all at the same time.
It's a mixture of joy and sorrow, basically, in a nutshell. And that's probably why it has such an emotional impact, because it mixes it well together. And a lot of great films do that. Just as a quick thing before I forget about it, the fourth wall breaking, I agree, it would be nice to have it as a mechanism, but it's difficult to do it right without breaking the immersion of the audience within the story. I believe that stuff that doesn't take itself so seriously, like you mentioned Deadpool, I think another great example is Malcolm in the Middle. Well, Malcolm would sometimes talk directly to the audience, but that's because sorry, go on.
I think Teen Titans Go never did it directly, but often
Oh.
they knew what they were doing was a very wink and nod to the audience where it felt like they were, but they weren't. Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn is really good at fourth wall breaking. The Harley Quinn Margot Robbie movies are fantastic at that, actually, honestly.
A quick gay example would be the another gay movies. They never quite did it, but they had some very close to the bone sort of like referential nods to the camera. Although another gay movie and The Sum of Us are in quite different orbits, shall we
Quite
say.
different orbits, yeah. Something interesting where it kind of gives a through line to the next thing I want to talk about, which is sort of the biggest part of this film for me, outside of the father-son relationship, and something that if I had been in touch with myself, I probably would have figured out much sooner than I did. But so Queer as Folk never really broke the fourth wall. It did because it had people doing introductions where they would talk to the audience. But generally speaking, it didn't break the fourth wall. So that is kind of a big difference in having a narrator that's also a character versus breaking the fourth wall. This film and stage play both had people actually talking to the audience as opposed to Queer as Folk, which is just narrators setting the scene, especially their Michael character. Queer as Folk was a very sexual show. It was, in a lot of ways, about sex. I don't know if in the British version there was ever mention of asexuality or a character that wasn't just like ready to go down at any particular. Even Debbie Novotny got down like a lot. I guess maybe the uncle that had the uncle that has AIDS. I don't know if he ever got sexy times in the British version. I'm pretty sure he was as close to an asexual character as they had in both series. I don't actually know because I never saw the British version.
The British version had plenty of sex throughout. The essence of the British version compared to the US is quite different. It's a bit more almost like fantastical, whereas the US version is a lot more sort of like down to earth, but sex runs throughout all of it, even the characters that weren't necessarily doing it. They would openly talk about sex,
Yeah.
so it was prevalent through both versions.
Okay. I wasn't, because I never saw the British one, so I don't want to mi misrepresent. And of course, Queer as Folk, the American version, ran longer. Eventually, we're going to have to talk about Queer as Folk because it was just such a big part of both queer and straight lives in that part of that part of time. But just kind of to set up, there's an expectation in older explicitly queer media that sex is going to happen in some way, shape, or form. I feel like there's a lot of it in queer coming of age stories, even in like Were the World Mine. I feel like there's sex going on. Love, Simon has that really wonderful yet also cringe scene where the dad's like, "Let's get you signed up for Grindr," if I remember correctly. So it's still a big thing. Some of Us is about sex, but it's also about a choice to not necessarily have sex. It's a very interesting conversation you don't see the nuance of. Harry is very sex positive. He doesn't mind that his son has sex. He's concerned that his son is using sex in order to not find out about his romantic side and not have a place where he settles down in. It's interesting because there's something about Jeff that almost reads as bisexual because he glibly talks about, "I also slept with girls a couple of times," which is in the trailer. It's a big to-do in the trailer. But it's really interesting in that the scene where the dad essentially cock blocks Jeff from having sex with Greg the first time Jeff brings Greg home is cringy because it's dad. But it's also about dad trying to facilitate Jeff finding out more about Greg as a person, unless as just a sexual partner. So there's talk about sex in this movie, and there's some references to that sex does happen, but there's also this sort of demystification about a queer life that isn't necessarily surrounding sex. Jeff in the second half of the movie, when he starts his caretaker side to take care of his dad, he kind of starts going without. And Harry mentions it in his asides, in his non-stroke asides. And that's also where Jeff and Greg meet again, is after Jeff has he hasn't given up sex and like I'm in like a shamey, I'm gonna be asexual, just take care of my dad sort of way. But it's more like he realized that it wasn't as important as it was to him in the beginning of the film. And it's this really cool kind of juxtaposition of it's not about the desire, it's about what sex actually means and what the act of it doing means for both straight and queer people. And it's a very meaningful line, and it's not something you see. A lot of coming of age gay stories, especially, and even some straight ones like Spank the Monkey, are about the act of having sex, not about what sex means. And so there's something in Some of Us where it's not just about sex positivity, which it is in a lot of ways, because no one's being shamed for having sex in this film. It's about the role of sex in relationship and the role of sex to an individual. And it's something really cool because they never come out and write, say, "This is about sex." But the having it, the not having it, the dad interfering for a purpose to find out more about Greg, Which also sends Greg off kilter because Greg also just expected this to be about sex. He expected this to be a booty call after the pup being taken home. And it's not just the revelation that Harry is accepting and that Greg has never seen an accepting father. It's also the revelation of, like, I want to do something bigger with my life. Yes, sex is great, but that's not all there is to me as a gay man. And but you also see Greg being kind of flirty and fun because he's on a pride float dressed as a like rhinestone cowboy type thing. But that's fun in a lot of ways. A lot of queer media tries to come close to this narrative. The one about the guy that is I think it's called Mr. X or something like that, where he's where he's an escort that gets fed this bullshit love narrative by this guy that hires him. I think it's Mr. X, I can't remember. But it's so many other queer movies tried to dance around something that some of us did so very well about the use of sex in relationships and what it means. I think Queer as Folk did some of this work, but I think some of us did it better and in a shorter time frame in a lot of ways. Not to say Queer as Folk didn't do important work, not to say Noah's Ark doesn't do it, not to say Cucumber and Banana tried to do some of that important work. But I think the sum of us in a conversation about what sex means in two individual and in a relationship where Jeff, Greg, and Harry are in life is really important. Harry is a straight dude that wants to like go after, he wants to have another sexual partner, even though his wife has passed on. Like that's part of what he's looking for is someone to have romance with, but also have sex with. He does a video dating service to find himself a, I think he calls her
Oh,
a
the Joe
bird or
dating.
something like that. I don't know. Yeah, but it is a little of its time. Video dating services, obviously, children don't know what that is. You have to teach the children. But it used to be when you wanted to meet someone and you couldn't get to like a bar, you'd go to a video dating service and they'd send you videos. Like Mad TV used to do sketches about it all the time. So all that to say, I heard you try and interject while I was doing my big monologue. So what was your thought?
I was just going, well, commenting on what we were just talking about, you can equivalent it to taking your Grindr profile and putting it on a video cassette and then sending it off to people's homes so they could view it in on the comfort of their TV.
I think a little bit bigger than a Grindr profile, but yes, I wouldn't know. I don't think I've ever done the Grindr, but I would assume it's probably bigger than that because you'd have to actually like talk about yourself to people outside of just your sexual preferences. So I don't know. I was a little aged out of video dating by the time I was starting to consider dating. So I maybe there was just an all sex version. I don't know.
But you could almost argue then that this film is a bit subversive then, in the sense that because a lot of portrayals of gay relationships had that sexual element and had this sort of underlying expectation that, oh, you guys are going to have sex eventually, huh? Or are going to mention that you're going to have sex, etc. By sort of almost sidestepping the sex aspect of it for a more sort of like also a deeper understanding of your partner and such. It's sort of subverting the expectation of that. And also at the same time, sort of reconfirming the fact that beyond sort of what Jeff's preferences are, he's another person just like anyone else. So it's sort of like difference. I'm seeing that there's different sides to this. Like every facet of this movie can be viewed from not just one, but a couple of different sides. And that kind of all comes back together to what we were talking about again with the progressiveness of it. I'd be really interested to take this to a couple of straight people I know and get them to sit down and watch this movie and see what they come away thinking about it.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that too. Because I this is one of my favorite queer films, and unless someone is like, "Hey, what are your favorite queer films?" I don't ever rank it in like my top films of all time. which is probably something I should consider doing. Because then I also have to explain the plot of the movie to people because they're like, oh, really? What is that movie about? Also, if you just Google Some of Us, a couple other things come up. It doesn't even come up. Like, you have to Google Some of Us, Russell Crowe, in order to find it because it's from 94, 95. So it's about 30 years old now at this point. I love that Russell Crowe won't shy away from talking about this film in interviews. He's done a lot of really good roles, but he's not shy about this film. Like he it never offended him that he played a gay role. There is this weird amusing subline about the Greg character wanting to practice kissing because they were both straight and they never kissed guys before. And Russell Crowe's like, I can't do that. Imagine if I asked Sharon Stone to do that. So there's an amusing little plot line about that, but I never get the sense that Russell Crowe in talking about this film is not incredibly proud of this work, and he really should be. Not only does he bare his buns quite famously at the beginning of the movie, but he also kind of bares his soul a little bit because he's at the right age where this is the age where you're still very libido driven, if you're libido driven in a lot of ways. But it is a story about transitioning into that next phase of life where it's still libido driven, but like there is more. Like the him at Jeff as a plumber, Greg as a florist that's going to eventually work in a park setting, Harry looking at the next portion of his life as he's trying to get his son deeper into manhood, into a more intentional version of himself. It's this interesting place of all these characters moving at the same time. The only characters that don't move are Greg's parents and in the stage play, Joyce, who plays the woman that Harry sort of starts dating and kind of falls in love with. Again, the change in having Joyce come back and have a conversation with Jeff and to check in on Harry, even though Harry's not there for it, I don't think. It's a really great choice to bring her back and not just have her last minute thing be hystericalness. I have this big kind of gripe about a lot of plays that write female characters is they write them either as too much Joan Crawford or way too hysterical. And having Joyce come back and be off kilter and unsure, but still having her be polite and have a conversation with Jeff and talk about Harry and being honest, it's such a good, small, quiet, wonderful scene. I mean, this is the kind of movie where you could remake it beat for beat and it would still work, but I don't think you have to. I think in showing this movie to other people, it still works. It still feels current. Yes, the video dating service and having the phone on the wall is a little bit, but like having a son and a father fight because the son is feeling a little vain. There's something very Saturday Night Fever about this dinner scene because it feels a little bit like it's two generations, but there's so much more love at this dinner table. And it's such an interesting convention because this is where you get your first fourth wall break. The Some of Us is it doesn't need to be remade. I can imagine too, even though it made $3 million in Australia in 1994, I don't know if there's anyone necessarily clamoring for a reboot of this necessarily. And also, I just think it's fine the way it is. I don't think we need to remake it. If
No.
there's ever a yen to remake it, hopefully someone will stumble across this podcast and let me know and get me on the horn so that I can be involved in doing this. Maybe it's one of the things when I'm famous enough, I'll stage a production of it that'll rekindle. Because I liked it so much, I literally bought the play. And like, I have the
Yes.
movie, I have the play. The only merchandise I don't have that I'd love is I'd love to have the movie poster of this with the son and the dad. It has like a really cool sunsetty type feel. There really is kind of this beauty and intimacy to this film. And it's so unexpected because the trailer made it seem like it was just this like wacky comedy about this straight dad and this gay son. Also, he talks so glibly about, I also slept with a couple of women just to see if I was still gay. In modern times, I'd be like, this character is bisexual. But like, I think people need to remember, again, being gay wasn't always cool. So it's not surprising that a gay character who'd slept with women a couple of times would still call themselves gay. Like, it's this weird thing of like, there's a moment in the Family Stone where Sarah Jessica Parker's character is like, "I'm sorry, your life was so hard," and people like try verbally defenestrate her, and it becomes very uncomfortable because she's like, "You know, your gay son has a disability." And like they paint her as a villain in this movie, but I don't think people realize being gay for a long time was very taboo, and all gay characters had to be punished and or die. Rebel Without a Cause, The Children's Hour, like even The Hours. Like I don't think people realize having a movie about queer people where they don't just survive, but they thrive and they become better is still very revolutionary. The Some of Us is still very tender and intimate, and even in that masculinity is so masculinely intimate. Like, I don't think you could remake it without people getting involved in changing things that have made this movie kind
No.
of the best version of what it could be. It's like the best remake is bringing back the stage play and bringing the Joyce character back in. Like, that's the only remake I could think that would work for me to do that.
It sounds as if it's perfect, really, the way it is. It does, as a form of art. It doesn't need to be redone again. It doesn't need to be recreated. There's certainly a lot of other quality LGBT stories out there. So yeah, let this movie be a lasting testament to this particular story. We can certainly do stage plays and such and have rewatches and things. I do wonder sometimes if there needs to be a more of a push to celebrate the classics, but not individually, you pop it on at home. Try and have more festivals and special movie nights where you try and get people together to celebrate these, the almost like perfect representations of what cinema is.
I will actively say too, I am also biased for this film. So another person may watch this film and goes, "God, this is so," you know, they may feel like these intimate moments drag a little bit, or they may have felt the dad is too cringy. But everything here happens for a reason. It probably helps that David Stevens, who wrote the play, I want to let me make sure to double check that he actually wrote the play. So he wrote the play. So this trilogy's that it's part of, David Stevens is openly gay. And he passed away in 2018. So they're showing out the nuance of an openly gay writer writing this work that makes a line like, "Well, I slept with a couple of girls, but I didn't want to get your hopes up." It makes it make more sense because it feels true. And in the 70s, that would have made sense to have happened. It almost feels like now we're doing, this is my kind of get off your lawn moment. It almost feels like now in trying to break down the binaries of labels, that we've gone too far in the other direction. And like now people are like, "I'm a gold star gay, I am a silver star gay," you know? And it's just like, guys, it's okay for gay people to experiment, just like it's okay for straight people to experiment and then be comfortable in who they are. And it's this interesting thing of it's a very witty moment. And if you kind of censor the play and only make Jeff completely straight and having never touched a woman, not only is it a different play, but it's also takes away the humor of that moment and the true honesty of like gay people that aren't sure they want to be gay and they do sleep with a woman, or like Nico Tortorella talking about sleeping with trans people before he married his current partner. Like, that's, people should be allowed to figure out who they are. And by like censoring a moment like that in a film, you kind of miss the point of what that very small humorous moment does give you. Also, I'd love to see the rest of the Currency trilogy. I have to be completely honest. When I have a lot of, when I have a Stephen Sondheim level of money, maybe that'll be something I mount as like a let's remember this thing and actually do a Currency trilogy and like kind of bring that into the world. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, we have a few minutes left for this episode. Did you have any other points you want to bring up, or any closing thoughts, etc.?
I mean, my one kind of big closing thought is I always spell Russell Crowe's name wrong. I always forget either the last L or that there's like an E at the end. So I apologize to Russell Crowe for that in person. I think it's really important to have intimate queer thing. I know we talk about everything is gay, even the straight stuff being about all media is queer, but there's also something really important about media for queer people by queer people. The Some of Us, I would love to see a version of this where it's a mother and daughter and it's completely sapphic. I think you could translate it fairly well. But there's something really important in media about queer stories by queer people for queer people. Like, yes, you can show this to a straight person and they'll be able to understand the story. It's not so deep. It's not so deep in RuPaul Drag Race lexicon lore that you have to like explain yes, God, mama, tongue pop, death drop stuff. Like there's something very universal about the story, but it really is a story about queer life. And I think that's really cool that it's, straight dad embracing his gay son, and that's such still a unique thing is both wonderful and also very troubling in equal measures. I don't think so. What's interesting too about this is that in the Wikipedia, the plot summary is like the darker turn of the story is the dad's stroke. But that's not the darker turn of the story. It starts the second half of the story. It starts Jeff moving into that role that Harry always wanted for him. Yes, it's bad when someone has a stroke and they lose ability that they had before, and it does change kind of the world. But I don't know that I'd call it a darker turn. I'm a little perturbed by the idea that loss of ability is the darker turn for this film, because it's a harrowing moment, but calling it a darker turn doesn't feel exactly that feels it feels more malevolent than the intention is. I think it's a very important moment, and it's played very well both on stage and screen for people that might be traumatized by that. Also, young Russell Crowe. What a hunk. He's still a hunk as he entered into his daddy years, obviously, but Russell Crowe specifically in Some of Us, not just because he shows off his bare body, but like there's something about how he embraces his own youth in the skin of a character who's gay, even though he himself is not, that really, as far as this is like Thomas Jane and Billy's first Hollywood screen kiss. Opposite of Sean Hayes. It still works. As long as you do something with respect, it still works. Queer as Folk wouldn't have happened if straight people weren't playing gay roles. I feel like I need to remind people that Hal Sparks is not a queer man. It's still very important, though, to be able to cast as well as you can. I'm not saying that you shouldn't attempt it. I'm just saying that, like, Some of Us is good representation for when representation works well, is what I'm going to say about that. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I hope that our episode today has at least brought this to attention of a few more people, and that they might be willing to go and check this movie out now.
Yeah.
And maybe it will make some new fond memories for them as well.
I hope so. I feel like people that like Colby Jansen are really going to get this movie. Like, if Colby Jansen is one of the porn actors of your choice, then it's very likely you will like The Some of Us. I feel like that's a weird way to recommend it, but whatever I gotta do to get more people talking about this movie, I'm willing to take that chance. I feel like many people would be amused by that. It's such a wonderfully intimate, diverse movie, and it's such a different LGBT movie than most. It's a little closer to Moonlight. It's not really a Call Me By Your Name because it doesn't have that fantastical travel element to it, and there's no cannibalism outside of the movie that I'm aware of. Yeah, it's just a really good. I'm hoping one day I can see the stage play of it. I'd love to see the stage version. If you're a fan of adaptation, this is one to watch, because if you want to learn how to do really good adaptation from stage to screen, this movie did it well and did it right. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well then, I think we've come to perhaps the end of this episode then, dear sir.
I think so too. I've also got a cake in the fridge I have to get back to. People keep messaging me and being like, "How far along are you the eating of your cake?" I'm doing very well, thank you, everyone. Don't worry about me. I'm very good at eating cake.
You've simply taken a snack break, a break from the snack.
Break from the snack.
Yes, but
Yes.
now you can return to it.
I appreciate that. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Everything Is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff. This was our discussion on 1994/1995's Australian LGBTQ dramedy, The Sum of Us, starring Russell Crowe and Jack Thompson, by openly gay screenwriter and playwright David Stevens. Thank you all for tuning in today. We hope you learned something. We hope you laughed along. We hope you made you think. And we'll see you next time for more Everything Is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.